Man lives in the sunlit world of what he believes to be reality. But there is, unseen by most, an underworld, a place that is just as real, but not as brightly lit. A dark side of the last knock. I'm your ghoulish host, Johnny Numb. Joining me tonight, as always, is
Billy Crash.
I did my best, Bill.
Dude, that was sexy. I got aroused.
And I didn't change a thing either, so.
Oh, man. I got the music for Tales of the Dark Side playing in my head now.
You know what? I want to find that and turn it into the ringtone for my phone. It just seems perfect.
Oh, that's a good... Yeah, man. Canadian horror television series. Awesome.
That repetitive... The 80 synthesizer, yeah.
Yeah, and it wasn't overly synthesized. It was almost like that little kid sound. Oh my god!
The dark side is always calling.
What, the dark side? What? What are we, like longshoremen? What, the dark side? What are you talking about?
We swear like longshoremen, Bill.
Fucking A.
Yeah.
This is a mature podcast. Yeah, I love mature. No, we're not, but you know.
We got clean lyrics on iTunes.
Words are words, fuck it.
Yeah.
But we're talking about television where, unless you're watching some horror television show on cable, you're going to have it edited down to like, gee whiz, Johnny's head blew up because of that demon.
Chillikers. Yeah.
Oh, man, that's a bummer.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're going to get into that, Bill, I think.
I think we're already there.
Yeah, so funny that how that happens. But you know what? I'm kind of curious about just what... I know we're going to talk about specific shows, but...
Yeah, it's all about television horror tonight, ladies and gentlemen. We didn't announce it clearly enough, but now you know.
Yes, and... Well, what are your thoughts on TV horror, Bill? Like, is there anything you grew up watching that was like genre or horror centric in particular?
I mean, originally it was, we could make monsters and, you know, all that crap. But
Adam's Family.
Adam's Family, which I love them both. Well, I loved Morticia and friggin',
Wednesday.
Well, I mean, Morticia and, oh my god,
Gomez?
Herman Munster's wife,
Oh.
Oh my gosh.
Oh man.
Jesus Christmas! Oh my god. Lily Munster, holy crap.
Sorry, Yvonne DiCarlo.
Oh my god, she's such a beauty too. People didn't believe me, it's like, yeah, and I was like, here's a picture of her sans makeup for the show, and they're like, I'm like, yes, she was a gasp-worthy woman.
Nice.
You know, but I mean, like the horror elements to the Twilight Zone, which we talked about, and
yes.
Then I mean, the big thing for me growing up that really blew my mind was the oh my god, how come I can't think of the name all of a sudden? What happened to me, man? What happened to my brain?
Describe what you're
the Night Stalker.
About. Yeah, yeah.
You know, Kolchak, the Night Stalker from 1974 with the great Darren McGavin. I mean,
yes.
That show was cool as hell, especially the original, like, first two. I think, you want to call them, TV movies. I mean, the show only ran for a total of 20 episodes.
Right.
It seems like there was more than that. But that was the, you know, the first show with the vampire and all that was just like, it was insane. And I remember watching it with my dad and, we were... even my mom, and we were all like, whoa, you know, we were just freaking out over it. It had a great, cool theme song. You know, Darren McGavin was great with the great Simon Oakland, you know, playing opposite him.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a story about this reporter who's investigating the weird and the bizarre. You know, it's almost like, you know, the bullshit for the National Enquirer and, you know, whatever other rag sheet you see at the edge of the... supermarket display in the United States, you know, it's like, but he was really like, you know, investigating like the real elements of it, and it always had a really high creep factor to it, and it was great, you know, how he survived all of those episodes with some of his run-ins with aliens and strange beings and whatnot. So that was like the biggest one growing up until, because like Night Gallery existed, and that was more, that was a little bit darker, but you know, and that's where Steven Spielberg got his start, you know, with the Rod Serling show. And The Outer Limits had some dark stuff, but and then there was Boris Karloff's Thriller,
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
which I recently tried to watch again. I forgot what channel's showing it, and they edited an hour show down to a half hour, and it's so chopped up, it's just like it's
Ooh.
cryptic and it's awful. But other than that, you know, it wasn't until cable started kicking in the 80s where you got, you know, well, you had Tales from the Dark Side, but that was still on regular television, and they did take some cool chances here and there. But the biggest and the bad, you know, there were two for me: Tales from the Crypt and The
Yeah, why don't you talk about The Hitchhiker a little bit, Bill? Because that was
Hitchhiker.
one that one played on basic cable. I guess they edited it down for basic cable when I was a kid. But I never really watched it. I was always kind of aware of it. I saw some of the intros and outros
Right.
with the guy who plays the hitchhiker,
Paige
but
Fletcher.
yeah, never really watched an episode of it though. So tell us about that, because I think sometimes that show kind of falls through the cracks of
And
in
it's,
the conversation,
yeah, and it's sad because they had 83 episodes from 83 to 91. Yeah, exactly. And the cool thing was, you know, Paige Fletcher is this hitchhiker, so he like opens and closes every show. And you know, he's always hitching a ride, so he's got his like, you know, his like olive drab, you know, jacket on, man, his short hair and his backpack, and he looks like a like semi-road warrior type. And like every show would begin with, you know, there's like with the most basic language imaginable, and then every writer, like every episode, would throw in a $1 word. Like it would be something like, you know, Paige Fletcher, like, you know, with his shadow on his face, you know, from not shaving, is like, so, you know, in this small town, you know, Marjorie's alone, and her husband left her long ago. Where is he now? No one really knows, but she's quite pulchritudinous, and who knows what. And I'm sitting there like, what the fuck is going on, you know? But the stories were good for me. A lot of times they rivaled Tales from the Crypt, because some of those episodes weren't necessarily had that little tongue-in-cheek little laugh. Some of them were like, you know, it was more dramatic, definitely more dramatic, and I prefer that. I mean, although I love Tales from the Crypt, you know, the Crypt Keeper and all. Yeah, this show had some, just some really cool, hard, dark. It was darker, so I liked it a little bit more. And one of my favorite episodes was with oh my God, oh my God, Gene Simmons, and he just killed it, man, in this great episode. What was it called? Let me try and find that. Good old Gene, the dancing machine. No, that's another Gene. I'm so sorry, I got that wrong. Yeah, Mr. Big, it's called, and it's great. And that one is actually a little bit funny. It's got Joe Flaherty in it and all. He plays Mr. Big in O.D. Phelan from 1986, and it's one of my favorites. Sandra Bernhard's in it. Joe Flaherty from Second City Television's in it. Gene Simmons, of course, like I said. Ryan Stiles is in it. Holy mother. And it's
Oh,
just,
whose line is it anyway?
yeah, exactly. It's a blast. And you could get it on YouTube. It's worth watching. These were always filmed really well. Again, in a similar filming style, like Tales from the Crypt. You know, they had that use of that great use of color and all. But where Tales from the Crypt could get a little silly sometimes, this show just usually kept it really, really dark. And even if they were like a little bit silly, it ended dark.
So it was always kind of bringing it back around to kind of that bleakness in a way.
Yeah, actually, there were 85 episodes. There were two without Paige Fletcher, which is strange. I don't recall what they were. But yeah, they were. It was great. I wish it would come back. I wish people had a place where they could get it, and check it out more.
Yeah, I don't know that it's actually even available proper, like on disc or anything like
I don't
that.
think so either.
Yeah.
And I can't even like I'm looking at some of the episodes. I was like, did I see that? And I was like, I watched this all the freaking time. I saw like every one of them, but I can't recall some of them.
Well, this brings up kind of an interesting point, Bill, with the ones you've mentioned, like Kolchak, Twilight Zone, Hitchhiker, and Tales from the Crypt. I mean, I would categorize Kolchak, The Night Stalker, as an anthology show because there's not really a continuing storyline. Like each episode is some new creature or menace he's confronting, but the characters stay the same, you
Yeah, and
know?
that's what was the beauty of the show because it didn't
Yeah.
fall into soap opera territory. I
No.
mean, at one point, I think Kolchak had a love interest. That was two episodes. It wasn't like, because
Yeah.
The X-Files was great because The X-Files got really, really dark at times. But that whole, I always preferred and still do the standalone episodes, the ones that are dealing with the alien conspiracy. It's a friggin' ridiculous soap opera crap that I think got away from Chris Carter and company when it right like where do we go now? I don't know what to do. What did we say before? I don't know. How does this work? And it became ludicrous and stupid, and it just weighed everything down. So that was to me the beauty of Kolchak. The Night Stalker. It just like you said, and well said. It was like an anthology show every week. Da-da, he's a reporter, and he's stepping into some new goo. So.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting that you mentioned the X-Files, Bill, because I believe Chris Carter and company were influenced by, from, I think they were influenced by the Night Stalker.
And you could see that,
Yeah.
I want to believe that they were.
Oh.
Good night, Cleveland. I have no idea what that means, but
Well, you mentioned, I mean, a big one, Bill, is, Tales from the Crypt, and it's funny because when I first brought up the notion of doing this show. it was a couple months back, and I was like, I've never seen any Tales from the Crypt. I've never seen any Tales from the Dark Side. Now, October has just passed, and I managed to get through the first season of Tales from the Dark Side, and I'm currently on the second season of Tales from the Crypt, so I'm making progress with both of them.
Well, that's good because Crypt Keeper was on from 89 to 96. They had
Good run. Yeah.
John Cassier did the Crypt Keeper voice, and it was sad because I always thought it was like with his voice and all, I always thought like Crypt Keeper was a female, but it was not apparently. So there were 93 episodes. A lot of great people appeared in it. Even Bobcat Goldthwait, Lance Henriksen, who did one of the best damn episodes.
Oh, I saw that one recently.
Yeah, what
Yeah.
was it called? Something Poker. Crap, I can't remember the title of it.
Yeah, I don't got it off the top of my head, but
Yeah,
it's
Chop Poker, which was fucking
yeah.
brilliant, absolutely brilliant. But William Sadler, Marshall Bell, Michael Ironside, freaking Miguel Farrar,
Yeah, and Demi Moore is in a good one too.
Yeah, absolutely. And Joe Pantoliano, Patricia
Yes.
Arquette,
Yeah.
and there were some, that had like a little. Oh, Don Rickles was in one of the best.
I think
Oh my
that's a
God.
season two one. His picture's on the DVD case.
Oh my God, with the ventriloquist act, it's friggin'. I remember watching that with my dad, and it was just like awesome. And no, so it was loaded. Always had big stars in it. Even Kirk friggin' Douglas, Terry Garr, John Glover.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I mean the list goes on. I mean, because John Glover is one of my favorite character actors, and he was
Yes,
part.
he is great.
Yeah, and
Yeah.
he's part of another show that I'll talk about soon, a television horror,
Ooh.
which didn't fare well. But
Well, Bill, what since we're talking about Tales from the Crypt and we're talking about anthologies,
yeah.
why do you think that
show works. So I think it's that's one of, now that I've started watching it, it's like I kind of watch two or three episodes at a clip, basically, because I'm like, oh, I just got to see, oh, who's directing the next one, who's starring in the next one, kind of thing. Because,
well, it comes down to money. They invested great money into it, you know. It had a cool theme, it had a real Halloween feel. And I think that kept in, you know, that was in the spirit of William Gaines' original, you know, Tales from the Crypt, you know, EC comic, which is wonderful. It, you know, it did have the funny edge on occasion. It did have that tongue-in-cheek element to it. But it also could get really, really dark. And I think it was Tales from the Crypt that had this one episode where this guy thought, this husband thought his wife was cheating on him, so he kills her, only to discover that she wasn't cheating on him at all. There's a surprise party. She was actually pregnant with their child.
Yeah, I just watched that.
It did, and it's like he murdered her, and it's like, oh my god, this is, that was one of the darkest episodes that they had. I thought.
Yeah. And that was actually, the credits said that was from Shock Suspense Stories, which was...
EC Comics, William Gaines.
It was an offshoot of Tales from the Crypt, yeah.
Yeah, because they had... Oh, those comics were amazing. I remember my dad saying that he loved them, and he kept all those EC Comics, which led to the bullshit, you know, censorship with the comic code crap. But my dad stored them in the basement of his parents' apartment in Newark. And when he came back from the Navy, he said, you know, he said, back then we didn't have plastic bags and stuff. So he said, I had the best comic book cover collection you could imagine, because all the rest of it just fell away to shit. But I do. I have one. I have a Weird Science one that's beaten up. But it's like, it's one of the few comic books I've saved because I sold my entire collection. And I saved it, you know, in remembrance of my dad. That and the first comic book he bought me, which was an X-Men number 68 or something like that from many, many moons ago. That's beaten up too, but it was like, you know. I loved it, you know, and I watched it with my dad, you know, my brother, and, you know, just like, oh, Tales from the Crypt is on, yeah! You know, I was like, yeah, they're on, yeah, yeah! Because I had, you know, for... I had some TNA, which, you know how that was, you know, big in the 80s and later on. So
I think with that show, Bill, you kind of raised the bar a bit, because it was HBO. Not everybody had HBO.
Right.
And, you know, so there was a bit of probably that element of the forbidden going on with that. And I think the producers were probably trying to push things because they didn't have as much restrictions to worry about. So you could do the TNA, you could toss out some F-bombs, you could be a little gory and grisly with the violence. And I mean, a lot of the violence was probably a lot inherent to the actual comics themselves, which had a reputation for being really grisly. So I can just kind of see them kind of just like, okay, here are the stories. We can add kind of assorted things to kind of push buttons, you know, in terms of content, which I kind of like that the stories maintain kind of the moralistic, you know, well, this is what you get kind of thing. But they also kind of give, you know, if you're just looking for a good time with something horror related, it'll give you that too, you know.
Gotcha.
You know, it's not preaching per se at you, and if it is, it's having a fun time kind of, you know, pointing at what's going on. So.
Yeah, definitely. It was a lot of fun. It was an event. It was for a lot of people, especially early on, like, you know, almost like Twin Peaks and all. It would be like to kick off your weekend, you know, you'd be like, got Tales from the Crypt, man. You know, it was like, it was great, you know, and it was cool because it's like, well, what crazy shit are they going to conjure now? And again, it was great because you didn't have a through line. You didn't have any. You didn't know where you were going to be, when it was going to be, who was going to be there, and, you know, like all, you know, popular shows, it's like once a show becomes popular, everybody wants to be on it. So that's why you had a great selection of stars. You know, it was like, I remember, you know, obviously not horror, but when Batman was big in '66 and all, they said, you know, people were beating down the doors to get on that. And then
Really? Okay.
it went wee, and everybody went away, and the whole thing fell apart. So this was that type of show where people couldn't wait to get on there. It's like, yeah, man, I gotta get on. So.
Well, yeah, and I think it's like you said, Bill, they put a lot of money into it, and you look at who the producers were, like Richard Donner, Robert Zemeckis, Walter Hill, Joel Silver. These were like big Hollywood hitters. So, I mean, I'm sure part of it was, the fact that it was a fun show and the scripts were a lot of fun, probably to perform, that they were getting a lot of these people in. But that's just kind of impressive to me because this is it's a horror show, and horror has commonly been kind of like the redheaded stepchild of the entertainment world, kind of. So to see all like these actors who were really big at that time, like taking a swing at these shows was really kind of neat.
Yeah, and I think one of the reasons it did so well too was because of the comedy element. It was like, it's easier, I think, to sell comedy horror than it is straight horror, like The Hitchhiker. The Hitchhiker, it's not like you it's not readily available. Tales from the Crypt is, and there's a series, a film series after, that you could bite into as well, where The Hitchhiker was just, Paige Fletcher walking the roads, and then it was over, But it lasted longer, technically. I mean, Tales from the Crypt is coming back, right? M. Night Shyamalan's doing it, bringing it back.
Oh, I might have heard something about
I
that,
did.
but
I haven't heard anything since.
he is like, I'm sorry, but if he's the brain trust behind that, I have my doubts. Yeah.
I know what you mean.
Well, after Split, I'm kind of done with that guy, but
Split. Oh my God.
I'm seeing trailers for Glass, and I am like, just
oh, it's awful.
drop the GL because that's what it looks like. So,
It is awful looking. It is just absolutely awful. Let me
yeah.
see if he is doing anything with this rebirth. Glass has been completed, if anybody really gives a crap.
It's going to be the biggest movie in January, which is known for its prestige pictures. So.
I no longer see anything. Hold on. Untitled M. Night Shyamalan Project, one episode's in pre-production.
Oh boy.
Let me see. Let's see what it is.
Are they doing a
Da-da-da-da-da.
Cloverfield thing where they shroud it in
I don't
secrecy?
know. Lauren Ambrose is in it, and
Oh, I like her.
Nell Tiger Free, who I don't recall off the top of my head. Know what this is? No one's really talking about what it is, but it's supposed to be television. It's episode
Okay.
1.1, so that means, episode one, season one. So,
Yeah.
we'll find out, I'm sure.
Yeah.
John Kiss, Kassir's name isn't up for bringing back. I think they're still arguing, fighting with Showtime or probably or
HBO.
HBO to get like, come on, man, let's revamp Tales from the Crypt. So I don't know.
I guess we'll find out.
I guess we will, man. I guess we will.
Well, Bill, can I ask you, was The
No.
Hitchhiker a half-hour show or was that an hour-long show?
That's a good question, man. The Hitchhiker, was it a half hour? I think it was a half hour. Oh my God, excuse me. The Hitchhiker, Paige Fletcher. I wish they would put on. What do I have to scroll to find out the time here?
You'd probably have to like click on an actual like episode title and
Runtime, yeah, half hour.
so I guess a question I was gonna ask Bill is like I know with the ones we've been talking about with exception of Night Stalker, these are like half hour shows. So do you think a certain because you got your half hour shows, you got your hour shows, and do you think one time format kind of lends itself better to
Yes.
horror than others? Yeah, go ahead.
Short, sharp, and to the point, man. I mean, even with Masters of Horror, which we haven't talked about yet, but had some stellar shows from, believe it
Yes.
or not, from actual Masters of Horror. It would, the shorter the better, because that was a half hour too.
No, Masters of Horror
It was an
was an
hour?
hour. It was an
Okay.
hour,
All
yeah.
right. One of the problems that I had, that I have with hour-long shows is sometimes it's like they have a good idea and they can't stretch it out. You know, Tales from the Dark Side, even some of their episodes that I didn't like, I'm like, man, this is a long half hour. And, you know,
Yeah.
it's just like, you know, it's like, all right, I love the show, but this one isn't working. And, you know, I always think, you know, if you could keep it short, sharp to the point, you know, it obviously comes down to writing, as all things do with any of this stuff that people film, and you know, writing and editing to make it work. But yeah, that's why I had a lot of trouble with The Outer Limits. Some of those shows were just way too long, you know. And where The Twilight Zone is like in and out, and it's like, wow, that was awesome, you know, no fat. And I think, you know, for a longer format, you know, some writers, you know, it's like they fall into the, you know, second act doldrums. It's like, oh, do I need a subplot? Do I need two, three subplots? How am I going to tie this together? And unless you're writing for, like, you know, like a brilliant writer for like Seinfeld, you know, or something like that, where you could like, you know, bring in all these intangibles and make it rock in the end, that's great. But otherwise, it could be tedious. Like Night Gallery, sometimes it was like, ooh.
Well, you know what? Well, I'm glad you said that because that's kind of how I feel too. And you know, I was talking to Dave Kay about this via Facebook message not too long ago. I was saying to him about how I'm stuck on season four of The Twilight Zone because they changed the format that season to an hour, and I was like, I actually stalled out. I haven't probably watched anything off my Blu-rays in like a year or more because the half hour format suited that show so well. Like you said, you hit fast and tell what you need to tell, and then
No fat.
you end it perfectly. Whereas I'm finding with a lot of these hour long episodes, at least the ones I've watched, is like they tell the story in a half hour and then they kind of repeat it over the next half hour. And this is back when there were hardly any commercial breaks, and commercial breaks were not as long, so it is really like almost a full hour of show and you feel it. And I feel bad saying that because there've been a few decent episodes that season from what I remember, but it's just like, why did you do that? And he said it was because they were competing with Alfred Hitchcock Presents, which,
That could
you
be
know, it,
tedious. Holy crap.
Yeah, and he was like, "Yeah, it didn't work out for either show." And I'm like, "Yeah, you're right." So, but so yeah, I'm glad you said that, Bill, because that's how I feel with Tales from the Crypt. Even
Well,
with Tale, go ahead.
no, well, no, 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 no. No, continue, because you were making a comment. I'm sorry.
Well, no, because like I said, I started watching Tales from the Dark Side as well, and that's most of those episodes are like 22 minutes, and I'm like, you know what? Even I guess what I got in the groove of was like, well, even if the episode's not that great, you're done with it fast, and then there's the next one, and it might be better, kind of thing. So it's kind of like I kind of want to get into the next one, even if the one I'm watching isn't that good, and it's more time freed up to watch it, kind of too. So.
Yeah, and I think that was one of the problems with Kolchak the Night Stalker. Some of those stories didn't lend themselves well to an hour format. And
Oh,
I'm,
I agree.
yeah, and you know, man, Darren McGavin was killing it though. He was like, I got this, I'm carrying this whole show on my back. And he did the best damn job he could, you know, which is great. But you know, other than the X-Files, which pulled off the hour format really, really well, because they had multiple storylines. The two horror TV shows that I really, really love, and well, we know we're going to Joss Whedon land right now.
Oh, okay. All right.
You know, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and it's incredibly successful, and for some people, stronger spin-off, Angel. Joss Whedon would have these multiple storylines, and he never forgot anything. He would have something happen in season two, and you'd get a response in season six or something like that. You know, like with Amy the rat, when Amy was turned into a rat, it's like, man, he forgot all about Amy, man. It's been like 2 seasons, and then suddenly, you know, it's like, oh, she's not a rat anymore, you know?
It's like the fucking wire, man.
Yeah, and the cool thing with Buffy the Vampire Slayer was it never You know, in the end, you know, there was a little bit of tediousness there, and it became a little soap opera-esque, but it didn't. You saw it was like a giant coming of age story for these different, you know, young people, high school, post high school, and how things didn't necessarily get better for them, how they grew as characters, how they changed. You got to see them morph, and yeah, there was comedy elements, but like, you know, the body, you know, the one where Buffy finds her mother dead, and it's like, you know, it was just amazing. The use of color and music and story and characters and the growth and what the actors brought to their roles. And man, I was going to say something really profound, but it went away.
Well, Bill, we're all just a vampire slayer, a jock, and a basket case, so you know.
Well, one of my favorite things was, like, you know, Joss Whedon would always play with the audience's head. And, you know, one season you're watching the show, and it starts like it normally does, and then suddenly you see this thing for, you know, Michelle Trachtenberg as Dawn, and you're like, what? And the show starts, and it's like she's living in the house with Buffy, and she's Buffy's sister, and this is like, she's been in the show for like 5 seasons, and it's like you forgot that she was there. And I remember every fan is like, what the fuck is going on? Who's this character? Where'd she come from? It's like she's always been there. And it wasn't until, like, I think, like at least 2 episodes until we realize it's, you know, that's the, you know, he implanted her for a particular reason, this and that, and he made it work. And it was great because every episode was fun in that regard. You're like, what kind of curveball is Joss Whedon going to throw our way? And how are we going to react to it? And how's this going to send the story into different, you know, areas? And, you know, some of this stuff was weird. You know, you had your Buffy bot and all that crap. And it's like, eh, I don't know if I could buy into that. But, you know, it was just, you know, he had a great cast of characters that rocked all of this. You know, obviously Sarah Michelle Gellar, Nicholas Brendon, Allison Hannigan, who I totally fell in love with, Anthony Stewart
Yeah.
Head, James Marsters, who I think everybody thought was British. He comes from a Shakespearean acting background, so him and Anthony Head got along really, really well.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, Emma Caulfield, who's just amazing. David Boreanaz, you know, who went on to become, you know, Angel, and that show rocked and got dark. And one of my favorite scenes from Angel ever was with Amy Acker. Oh my God, I love her so much. She's so hyper delicious.
Wow.
It was great because he was taking this going on this elevator to hell. So he steps on this elevator. He's in LA, you know, and he steps on this elevator and it's moving, 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 and he gets out and he's right where he was. And he's like, I think he even said, oh, funny, cute, or something like that. And I was just laughing my ass off, you know. And you know, Charisma Carpenter, Seth Green, oh, Eliza Dushku,
Yeah, it's
and
just like so many actors who got their start there, and you know.
yeah, and characters would come and go, and you know they'd be there for like, you know, 10, 20, 30 episodes, and then boop, dead, you know, or something like that. You're like, you'd start to love them, and it's like, oh my God, they're so great. You know, Juliet Landau, who's amazing. Man, I mean, the list goes on. There were so many phenomenal. DB Woodside, you know, he was a principal on, you know, on the show for a while. It's like, holy, a great Alex Denisof, who, you know, was really involved with Angel. So it's just,
You know,
man.
Bill, I'm less versed in Buffy than,
Oh!
well, you know what? I watched a couple
And you
episodes, and
didn't dig it.
I really didn't. So maybe I should go back because I had the same experience when I watched the pilot of Firefly, and for years I kind of avoided it. And then me and my girlfriend watched it like a year or two ago together, and I loved it. So.
You know, Buffy, it was funny because I remember seeing billboards for Buffy all over the place. I'm like, what the fuck is this crap? And, you know, I watched, like, I really wasn't into it first season. And then after that, talk about an addiction. Like, I remember printing out a television schedule for myself because my nightlife revolved around that show during a week for
Gotcha.
years. And I remember, I'm like, I can't live like this anymore. So once Buffy and Angel went off the air, that's when I really stopped watching television. Only it's if I watch a series now, I'm gonna binge watch it because I'm not gonna be glued anymore,
Yeah.
to the tube. But they were just worthy of it for me, and I just love it. The only problem I had with Angel and Buffy is this one thing. And Joss, if you could tell, explain why that when they take a wooden stake and stab a vampire, that their clothes fall to dust. What the fuck, man? What the hell is that? Why would their clothes fall to dust? So
Okay.
anyway, but I mean, the language he even used. I mean, the lexicon of Buffy. I mean, there have been major linguistics papers written on this
Yeah.
stuff in grad school, and people getting their doctorates. Because he created like a whole new type of language, and it's just that was the depth of this show and of both shows. And where other it's like, yeah, let's do this horror fucking thing. Yeah, it's disposable. Yeah, who gives a shit? Kids will love it. Whatever. This had a lot, much more deeper meaning. Music, just incredible. I mean, we could just have a Buffy podcast and talk about Buffy for 10 years.
I need to watch it first.
You son of a bitch.
But
You
you
call
know,
yourself a horror fan?
yeah. You call yourself a horror fan, you son of a bitch. Hit the bricks, pal, and leave.
put that coffee down.
You know what the first prize is? It's the box set of Buffy and Angel. Second prize, a box of wooden stakes. Third prize is you're flung into the fires of the sun.
Flung into the Hellmouth, Johnny, so you need to watch
Ah,
Buffy.
damn it. Yeah. Well, you know what, Bill, to that end, I mean, even with Firefly, there was this specific clip and cadence that the characters had when they
Yes,
and
exactly.
when they interacted, and I think that's what kind of clicked with me. And I kind of saw things in reverse, because it's like I saw the Avengers, which he wrote and directed, and I was like picking up on these little unique kind of flourishes in the character interaction and language that was being used, which was atypical kind of the other Marvel films that I'd seen. So it was interesting then to go watch Firefly, and it's like, oh, okay, that's where that comes from, and that's why these characters seem to have a bit more life than what you typically get out of I'm talking about the Marvel movies.
Oh, I got you.
So I mean that was a That was kind of neat, so that's probably why I should try to find a way to get back into Buffy and give it another shot. So,
Yeah, give her another whirl, man.
and those shows were a half hour too, Bill, right?
No, they
I
were an
think,
hour.
really? Okay.
Buffet all the way, Johnny. I mean, there's like no dull moments, man. Really, I mean, you didn't know what you were gonna get. They were just, I think, as like as shocking as like full blown, dramatic shows like most recently Ozark. You
I need to
watched,
see that,
oh
yeah.
man, yeah, I mean, you never know what's gonna happen. And you had that with Breaking Bad, where it's like
Yes.
every character is on the, could be on a slab next second, and I really like that. And a lot of that comes from Buffy because Joss Whedon would take these great chances. And it was only on rare occasions that a character that was supposedly killed might come back. And he really used it to his advantage with, the main character. When, she was brought back and she was like, I was at peace. Why did you do this to me? And it was, and she came back different. And it was, I was like, okay, I could stomach this a little bit more now,
Sometimes dead is better, Billy.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Well, it's there are some shows like we were talking about The Night Stalker, and another show that I think falls in the horror canon, though some people might argue it is one that I stuck with through the bitter end, and that was Dexter. Did you ever watch any Dexter,
Yeah,
Bill?
and I don't get it, man. That was to me just so ludicrous. I just couldn't. I couldn't, man. I wanted to, and I was just like my stomach was in a knot watching it, trying to buy into this, he's a sociopath, but it's like
Well, I agree that like a certain leap has to be made to like sort of engage with it. You kind of got to acknowledge that the conceit of the show is pretty pretty ridiculous,
Yeah, it was,
but
you know what the problem for me was, like, I didn't mind him. I thought it was really cool that you have like a serial killer who's a friggin' crime scene investigator. That's awesome. But like the whole police element was so incredibly far removed from reality.
it
It
was movie cops, yeah.
was they were even worse than movie cops. I'm like, this is just, it was just so ridiculous. I just couldn't handle it. And near the end of the series, it was just awful. And what, fucking, I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. Like, what the hell? Who wrote that shit, man?
So did you make it through through to the end,
Yeah,
Bill?
I guess so. But I mean, it was reluctant, and I hated it. And yeah, I wouldn't even put that show on like my top 200 list. It was awful.
You know, this
Sorry, man.
was no, it's cool. I mean, I get it, and I agree with some of your assessment there actually, because I have the last season on DVD, and it's mostly because I want to have it to remind me of how not to write, how not to see character arcs through, and how not to see storylines through to a satisfying conclusion. The last season was a train wreck of a fucking season.
I'm glad you brought that up, Johnny, because you're right. They
Went
didn't
on
have
too
a,
long, yeah.
yeah, well, they didn't have a good Bible. Like every show has what's called a Bible, and it's like this is the guideline. I was pointing this out to my housemate Cheryl Ann Betts yesterday watching an episode of Ozark. I said every episode's written by somebody completely different. They don't have a pool of writers, but you can't even tell. You cannot even tell that it's different writers. And that's because the Bible for the show is so well crafted that any writer looking at these are the rules, you know what to do. Like the one of the number one rules for the Bible for the X-Files was that Scully and Mulder will never kiss. You know, and that was like, and that was it. No matter how everybody wanted them to get together, whatever, blah blah blah. And if a story has a really good Bible, that it's going to have a really good run. And we see that with Joss Whedon's work. Kolchak had it to a degree. I just think the hour format didn't fit the show.
Yeah, it was too much.
Yeah, it was too much to fill, you know. But yeah, you're right. And Dexter just like they took their Bible and threw it out. You know, if once that show starts breaking its own rules, then it just becomes a joke.
Yeah, I think they should have. I mean, I'll definitely agree that they should have wrapped that show up sooner. A lot of people seem to agree that season four with John Lithgow as the Trinity Killer is like the high of the whole series.
How can you go wrong with John Lithgow?
Oh, and he's fantastic in that season. I mean, Michael C. Hall, you know, I love, you know, I became a fan of his through that show. I think he's good with what he's given, considering he has to like shoulder the whole thing too. But I
Yeah,
think it
but
was the problem was, and I've read some interesting takes. The AV Club had an interesting take on the show, saying that the writers were so the writers and the showrunners were so beholden to Dexter as like an avenging angel
yeah.
that they could never make the character too interesting, because they always had to they had to write around the fact that, you know, he can never be caught because he's this, as opposed to Breaking Bad, where Walter White is a character who you don't like all the time, and probably like 50 to 75% of the show you hate that guy. I
I am
know
the
I
one who
did.
knocks.
Exactly. You know, it's
Say
like
my name! Sorry, go ahead.
not to take anything away from Bryan Cranston, who's fantastic
Oh, he crushed it, man.
at towing all those dramatic beats so well, that he's such a loathsome character at times, but then you feel bad for him. It's this total seesaw kind of effect going on.
Complex
But
character.
exactly, but Dexter wasn't a complex character, so it became this, you know, each season they had to introduce kind of a new villain or a new weird theme kind of to keep things kind of fresh, and then it began to kind of peter out, you know, after a certain point.
Yeah, and they were trying to give him like, something horrendous happened to him in his childhood, and that made him the way he is. And that's Hollywood bullshit because a sociopath is born. They are not created. And that's why I
And
hate
that,
Hollywood, for
yeah.
every fucking sociopath. It's like, well, we got to show what happened to this child. Fuck you, man. Nothing happened to the kid. He was born bad. You're a sociopath. You're B cluster personality disorder, person narcissist, sociopath, psychopath. They all fall into that same category. They're born that way. They're hardwired wrong, and it's like there's no inciting incident. They're born bad, and that's they don't have they can't they have no capacity to love any crap like that. So it's like
So what you're saying, Bill, is Halloween got it right?
wow, man. Wow. But wasn't
Anyway.
the thing for him, he saw his sister making out with a guy or some shit.
Oh, with Michael Myers.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean the rationale that Dr. Loomis uses is that he was just like born evil,
Yeah.
basically,
Yeah, I'm with Dr. Loomis, man. I always go in my life, whatever's happening, I always say, what would Donald Pleasance do? So, whatever Donald Pleasance says, I give you fear. I'm
You'll
there,
see
man.
me in the pit for fear.
Can you imagine if he was in the pit? Holy crap, that would have been awesome.
It'd be like
We're here to make
Blofeld.
friends.
Yeah, it'd be a Blofeld's bald head bobbing around in
Oh
the
my God. Oh my God. Dude, oh.
Bill,
I
like,
don't know, Johnny, tell me.
I mean, the thing with Dexter is, I would say that, like, if you don't go into it expecting something with the accuracy and precision of, say, the police procedural of The Wire or something like that, that it can be entertaining in its own way. That's kind of how I approached it.
Yeah. Yeah, I know people now who won't even rec because of that last season won't even begin to even recommend the series to anyone.
I was just kind of amazed by that last season because it actually the first two episodes were pretty good, and then it turned into this thing where it was like they were writing it literally as they were shooting and just passing lines off. That's what it felt like because none of
Gotcha.
it made sense. There was like no consistency with the characters and nothing made sense, and everything was kind of like just because it was kind of it was like, oh, we have this contractual obligation to make one more season. Let's put as little effort as possible. So I think it did a disservice to a lot of what came before with the characters and everything. So,
Gotcha.
but Bill, another show that's insanely popular that I've watched a couple seasons of, and I kind of regret watching a couple seasons of it, is American Horror Story, which is kind of a phenomenon. Have you
Yes.
seen any of that, Bill?
I tried to watch season one. I watched two episodes and I counted like 8 million tropes and I'm like, I'm out. And I never went back. And it's funny, for as popular as it is, no one that I know who enjoys horror tells me like, oh, Bill, you should really watch this season. All I ever hear is disappointment after disappointment. People watch it and they can't turn away, like The Walking Dead. It's like, oh, I've been watching it for 8 years, so it's like, it's like, why are you still watching it if it's just a fucking soap opera and you hate it now?
I'm doing better with that, Bill. Like
Oh,
with
boy.
even with movies, it's like if I'm watching something and after 15 minutes I'm like I'm really not feeling this, I'll turn it off or start fast forwarding through it like you do.
Good man. Yeah, why waste your freaking time on crap?
Life's too short. I can stop if something looks interesting and then move on to something better, hopefully. But yeah, I liked a couple seasons of, I've only watched up to season five of American Horror Story, and season five is kind of where I'll stop for a while because it was terrible. It was the hotel season with Lady Gaga, who I don't get at all. But she was essentially playing the Countess Báthory from Daughters of Darkness, only without any of Delphine Seyrig's allure and charm and talent, basically. So, but
Gotcha.
that's a show where I can acknowledge that, okay, I've seen some of this stuff before, but the way they're presenting it is kind of, I kind of like what they're doing with it. But I kind of concur with, you've called Walking Dead a soap opera, and I'm like, well, that's kind of what American Horror Story is too. It's like each season is its own self-contained story, even though now it's branching out and crossing over into multiple seasons with the current season.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they use a lot of the same actors, but
right.
But it is kind of like, well, the beating heart of it isn't is the characters and their sort of romantic drama and conflict and all that stuff. So it's
yeah, it's just like oh my God, what's the other friggin' horror show that people watch? Oh man, I just forgot.
Currently?
No, it was like the Bates Motel. I love Vera Farmiga; she's amazing. But right from the first episode, even though it had some amazing dramatic moments, you know, it had these tropes, and you're in a small town, and like already two people were dead or something. I'm like, come on, man! Like, what is this? Like Miss Fletcher's, you know, Murder She Wrote, where there's like, by the time the series was over, 10,000 people had been murdered in her little town or some shit. You know, it's like,
yeah,
and it's like I can't buy into this reality that you're creating because it's nonsensical, you know, and it just detracts. And it's like, what is up with the writing? Why can't you have, why can't these writers step up their fucking game? And that's what pissed me off.
You know what, Bill? I actually watched the first season of Bates Motel, and I was mm-hmm. kind of like, there was just like this through line of mediocrity through the whole thing. I think that was yeah. kind of where I was.
Yeah, even though Vera Farmiga was given her, you know, given 110% like she always does. I mean, I can't believe I said that. I fucking hate when people say 110%. It can't be. She's given 100%. You know, she's given her all to the role, and yeah. she's losing herself in it. But it's like, you know, the writing isn't supporting this. It just got hokey to me. You know, they put a guy in a bathtub, you know, dead guy in a bathtub. Wow, I haven't seen that a million times. Draw the curtain, great. Hey, a cop comes over and it's like, yeah, can I use your bathroom? Oh my God, the suspense. No. Oh, the boredom. We've seen this a million times.
Well,
and you know, then, come on, man. Fucking stupid. Like, the guy can't even smell blood on a guy. Like, come on, man.
Like, well, oh. And then in the first episode, Norma gets raped in the first episode. Yeah. So I'm like, okay.
And right. That was a heavy scene, man. And it was great in regards to, you know, what transpired. You know, I was like, man, you're doing this. This is strong. You're taking chances.
But we have seen that before.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm getting at. Yeah. And it didn't. But the thing is, it didn't. They had this big suspenseful moment. Where's it going to go? And it went right into mediocrity. And it was just like when I saw The Walking Dead for the first time. Well, okay. First scene, you know, there's Mr. Lincoln there. It's Rick Grimes. He's walking. There's this little kid who's a zombie, and he just pulls out a service revolver, shoots her between the eyes. And I'm like, this is great, because they just said, hey, stay on your toes. Anything can happen. And it went right into the most mundane, ludicrous, third-rate, piece-of-shit soap opera crap. And it never got out from under it. The only other great episode that I saw was when Negan was like, hello, I'm Negan, and here's Lucille, and you're going down. And it was and that was, to me, the most disturbing thing I've ever seen on television, besides the ending to the original Twin Peaks series.
Right.
And that was very disconcerting. And I was like, man, they finally got it right. And then they just milked that to death. Like, Negan could have been killed a million times over, but, oh, we got to keep him going. It was like,
And I heard Rick recently got a very unceremonious send off that was probably a couple seasons.
He went out with a bang. He went out with a bang.
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you because I've never watched an episode of that show.
You're smart, man. Well, I feel bad because, like, my friend Sean Scott, who listens to the show and, you know, hangs out at the great Banter's Hard Cider.
Hi, Sean.
Hey, Sean. Sean's awesome, and Sean's a great guy. I mean, you just, like, you know, more guys like Sean, the world would be a better place. But you mentioned The Walking Dead, and his whole face turns. He's like, fuck, man, they deviated from the comic book series. So fuck, you know, he's like, oh, you know, he just gets all like, you know, you got to stun him a little bit, you know, keep him down, you know, so.
Well, Bill, you know, maybe we should end on a strong note, and we don't have to talk about it too much because we have talked about it in the past, but I think a show that came up when I was up at Stroudsburg with you at Banter's with Sean was Ash versus the Evil Dead.
Oh my God. That is the best in the past 10 years. That's the best friggin' thing. That's the best horror anything I've seen since Buffy and Angel. And I mean true horror, because it's a gore fest. It's funny as shit. Smart writing, excellent characters. Bruce Campbell kills, destroys. It's just amazing, man.
And you know, that's a good point, Bill. It's not just a gore fest, though. I was shocked at how innovative the effects were on
Yes.
that
Yep.
show and what they did. They weren't being lazy with it. They could have just pandered to the Evil Dead fans who just wanted to see more of the same, like, you know, but they actually upped the ante. They used a lot of practical stuff. They introduced new characters and did a great job of doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And the storyline was awesome. You know, it's like a, again, it's like a fast burning, clean burning half hour show where you just want to dive into the next one. I finished up season three recently, and you know, despite the fact that it's sad that the show didn't get picked up for another season,
Pisses me off.
I'm like, at the same time,
They went out on a high note.
Freaks and Geeks had one season, Mission Hill had one season. We got three fucking great seasons of Ash versus Evil Dead, so I'm not going to complain too much about that. But
Understood.
yeah, so I mean, of course it would be great if they kept going, but like, what if it turned into Dexter and they ran out of steam after like season 7 or 8, or The Walking Dead or something like that?
Well, on that note, if I can, real quick, there were two horror series that didn't really make the grade. They didn't last too long. One was Nightmare Cafe,
Okay.
starring the great Robert Englund. Maybe you heard of him. I don't know. As the owner Blackie of the Nightmare Cafe, where people would come in and stories would, it would be an anthology series. It just didn't work. And the other, which also didn't work, it only lasted 13 episodes, starred Peter Horton as Ezekiel Stone. He was a detective who was killed and went to hell for murdering someone. And the devil, played by one of the greatest devils you will ever see, played by the phenomenal John Glover. And it was great because John Glover was only supposed to come on here and there, but the chemistry with him and Peter Horton, and it made the show rock, and it was just brilliant in that regard. The stories, just like the ill-fated Constantine series, was the writing again. Each show had the same beat, had the same start, same finish, so it becomes boring. And when they altered an episode in friggin' Brimstone, it was too late, so it fell through. And you can't get this anywhere. If you could find it somewhere, find an episode, watch it. Just look at, and John Glover, I mean, he just really owns this, and he plays a devil like you really haven't seen before. One of the best portrayals. And Constantine was sad. I really wanted to love it. I was sticking with it, but it was the same formula. It was like a Disney friggin' movie. It was like each episode was the same, and that was really sad. Yeah, who played Constantine in this series?
Oh, I don't even know.
Man, who, God, I can't remember his name.
You know, Bill, I actually want to rewatch the movie because
I love the movie. It's a trip.
I've softened towards Keanu, and I totally forgot that Tilda Swinton was in it, and I got to rewatch it because of that.
You need to, buddy. You need to. And why? Oh, IMDb's giving me fits, man.
Well, can I mention too quickly, Bill,
Of
that if
course.
anybody out there has seen them and can verify that I'm not crazy, there used to be this show, I swear, and it had Robert Englund as the host. It would air on the USA Network like back in the early 90s, late 80s, and it was called Shadow Theater.
Shit, I
And
didn't even know that.
it was, I don't know if it's listed anywhere, and I didn't look before the show because it only just popped into my head right now, but it was essentially like a clip show where he's the host and he's just introducing clips from like random horror movies like Halloween and stuff like that. It was like this weird thing that I remember airing like in the middle of the afternoon on a Saturday or
Gotcha.
something. So I don't know if that was an actual thing that the USA Network just kind of cobbled together to fill some programming space or what. But there was another show that aired on the Comedy Channel before it became Comedy Central, which was this very low budget, like cable access kind of thing with these two really kind of losery looking guys. You know, it's kind of like your typical podcast duo. So,
Losers.
the show was called Drive-In Reviews, and it was kind of similar. it was like these two guys would play clips from usually like these direct-to-video or really like low-budget movies that were kind of current, and they would like do commentary, like funny commentary over the clips or whatever. But it was like a really cheap-looking set, basically, just these two guys in chairs and like a blue backdrop. And occasionally they would do like these comedy bits in between their commentary on the clips. And I remember watching that show because it was like highlighting these gory moments from these low budget movies. Mm-hmm. So I was like, oh, like they played some clips from Nightbreed and
nice.
Curse 3, I think, was another one they played some clips from. So I have vague memories of seeing this show, but I liked watching it because it was like, oh, it's horror stuff, and it's on the Comedy Channel, and it's like, oh, this is like graphic, gruesome stuff from my impressionable little mind. So if anybody knows if that show exists somewhere still, like on YouTube or whatever, let me know.
Cool, man. And I found it. Matt Ryan played John Constantine, and he also reprised his role for the animated series Constantine: City of Demons this year, all 10 episodes.
Cool.
Yeah, so, man, I guess...
Maybe the animated series is better, Bill.
It's got great ratings. It's almost a 4 out of 5 star rating, so I got to check that out, man.
I got to say, some of the DC animated movies that have come out, I mean, actually all of them are much better than the actual live-action movies that have been putting out. Yeah,
that's cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I think it's Scream Out time, man.
Are we changing the channel to channel Scream Out, Bill?
Yeah. These are
hey,
one
kids. It's Billy.
All right, here's some beautiful souls you can follow on Twitter. People that we love, respect, and admire. And so check them out. So here's their Twitter handles. I am Melanie Wise. Who's she? She's Melanie Wise, damn it. And she's an actor, producer, and the principal behind Artemis Pix and founder of the Artemis Film Fest. And learn more because you can go to Artemis. ArtemisMotionPictures.com and ArtemisFilmFestival.com. Submit things to the festival right now. She's amazing. The excellent Kyle D. Hester. Who is he? Kyle Hester, damn it. Actor, filmmaker, and he's happily married to the Tracy Ray. And his films are Preacher 6, The Chair Horror, Zombie with a Shotgun, and definitely check out what he's doing. Go to IMDb.com for more. The wonderful Tamara Ferguson, and that's under Tamara's Dragonfly. She's a USA Today best-selling author. She's award-winning for romance, suspense, and check her out at kissedbyfate.com, besides Amazon. The great actor, Zamet _ Mark, with a C, damn it. He's an actor represented by Cowley Knox Guy. He's out of London, UK. Check him out on IMDb. He's got great stuff coming out. He's done great things. He looks cool. He's an awesome guy. Don't miss him. The great Real Jilly G. And she's an occasional writer, and that's ridiculous because she is a writer, period. She's not famous, but she's a lover of life, music, art, animals, photography, writing, reading, and supporting the arts, which she always does. She's an indie supporter and Canadian, and we love that. She's out of the Toronto area. Check out her great writing and photography and more at CrimsonQuintessence.com. The phenomenal Melanie McCurdy. She was in The Orphan Killer 2, and she's an author and an artist and a poet and a photographer, and she supports indie film, also out of Canada, and go to MelanieMcCurdy.com. The Cool Souls at GN Horror. What is that? That's Ginger Nuts of Horror, and that's UK's number one independent horror review website. And you can follow them on Instagram, and they're out of Edinburgh, Scotland. And go to gingernutsofhorror.com. And Queen Halloween W. What's that? That's Holidays Halloween. Holidays Halloween Radio is on Mixcloud, and it's all about horror and Halloween, obviously. Save the Bats. You could also follow them on Facebook, and they're out of the Smoky Mountains, Tennessee. And the other IRL that you could check them out at is Queen Halloween 1. All Hallows Haunts at Hallows Haunts, and it's horror and Halloween, and that's pretty much it. And also check them out at allhallowshaunts.wordpress.com. Awesome. And finally, last but not least, the wonderful person who lives at the Bates Motel, so she says, is Creepazoid Kelly. She promotes and supports horror and supports indie film and such. She's listed number 10 for top most influential people on Twitter for music and film. And she wants creators to unite, and she's part of the horror family. And we love all these great souls, so follow them. And Johnny, where can people follow you?
You can find me at Twitter and Letterboxd at Johnny Numb. There are no H's in those Johnnies. Billy, what about you?
At Crash Palace on Twitter and at CrashPalaceProductions.com for links to this site and articles based on horror, of course. And if you're so inclined, if you want to get some merchandise, because people asked for it, so we created it. Actually, Paul Belsey did. He created the logo for The Last Knock and for Crash Palace. Go to redbubble.com under Crash Palace, and you could find t-shirts and all that other fun stuff. And show us a picture. Send me a picture, and I'll make sure that the world gets to see you in whatever you're wearing. Crash Palace The Last Knock wise. I don't think we did a friggin' G-string or anything like that, but maybe. Can I get the Last Knock thong, please?
Billy, I think you should model the Last Knock thong.
No, I shouldn't. Can I get the Last Knock nipple clamps, please?
Get your Borat on, Billy. Come on.
Oh my gosh, that's insane, man.
Yeah.
Brother. Well, that's it, Johnny. That's all I got.
Well, Billy, I'll see you in another 2 weeks. Same bat time, same bat channel. How's that sound?
It sounds good to me, as long as you're vampire bats.
Yeah, I was thinking Joe Flaherty playing Count whatever Floyd. From SCTV.
I'm Count Floyd. Oh, oh, oh.
You know what happened to Count Floyd? He died.
There's a Count Floyd album. If you could get that on vinyl, that would be friggin' amazing.
Oh, I'm sure I could find it.
I'm sure you can. All right, on that note, man, we're out of here.
All right, see you, Bill.
All right, buddy. Bye.